argument is United States versus Colon. Ms. Dahl.
May it please the court. This case reflects overreaching, both prosecutorial and law enforcement. I would like to begin today with our argument on Mr. Colon's conspiracy charge and answer any questions of the court, and then turn to the Fourth Amendment issue. The evidence was categorically insufficient to support the conviction for drug trafficking conspiracy in this case. This court has repeatedly said that evidence of a buyer-seller relationship standing alone is insufficient to establish a conspiracy. But that's the government's evidence in this case. The court has indicated that there are various plus factors that we look at to determine whether the buyer-seller relationship evolves into the conspiratorial agreement. We've discussed those factors in both of our briefs, and I won't repeat that analysis here except to the extent the court has any questions. One of the most significant factors is, of course, the issue of fronting or sales on credit. And it's undisputed that there were no sales on credit.
But I guess the government responds to your arguments by saying, yes, you've pointed out that very often there are things like fronting, but that's not a necessary part of the evidence to show a conspiracy. And here, even though it doesn't seem to have gone on for a long time, it looks as though there was some economic interdependence between Mr. Colon and the others, Mr. Saucedo especially. He's out there doing the street sales, the money is going back, and he's buying his product at a pretty substantial discount over what they sell it to other people at. So I think what you need to focus on is what they did have. Why isn't that enough, as opposed to the fact that they didn't have various other things?
Your Honor, with respect to any kind of economic interdependence, we would dispute that there was any evidence of that. There were a series of five or six transactions, according to the corroborated evidence. Those transactions were spot dealings in that they were arranged on an ad hoc basis. There was no evidence that there was any kind of commitment to future sales. There was no evidence that there was any kind of return on sales that Mr. Colon may have been making to Saucedo.
Didn't Colon call Saucedo as soon as he got stopped, chased by the police, and lost the 9 ounces? Didn't he call back to tell Saucedo what happened?
I believe the evidence is that he called the next day.
The next day, and reported how that didn't go very well for him.
We don't have that communication because that wasn't an intercepted communication.
But Saucedo testified to that.
He testified that Colon did call.
And then Saucedo's runner, Sepp Levita, when he got ripped, as he says, by the police, he called Colon to let Colon know that the money Colon had just paid him had been taken.
Yes, there is.
Don't those communications reflect some sort of mutuality, some sort of shared interest in the continuity of their business?
Those communications, according to the evidence, did occur. We would submit that they are, frankly, more consistent with self-interest.
Well, your theory is that Colin was a good customer, right?
That's correct.
And this is how you treat a good customer. So wasn't his concern when he called Saucedo that he wanted the cocaine replaced, or?
There is evidence that Saucedo testified that
you're a customer and you get ripped off. You're a good customer, so you tell your supplier, you know, I got ripped off. I'd like you to replace my purchase, you know.
According to the government's evidence, $5,500 had been paid for the September 6th transaction, and there was, again, according to the government's evidence, another transaction on September 9th. Saucedo testified that Colon had told him he needed to make up the sales.
Did Colon ever warn them about anything? Saucedo?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Did he ever warn them?
There is evidence that Colon did call Saucedo and tell him that he was stopped by police on September 6th. I believe the evidence is that he called.
Yes, I know, but was he warning Cicito that Cicito might be in trouble?
I don't believe there's evidence of that. Those communications weren't intercepted. The government's fallback position with respect to the conspiracy is that if Mr. Colon is not a member of the conspiracy, that he is liable as an aider and abettor. But the government does not identify a single act of assistance that Colon would have provided the conspiracy other than the...
Did these fellows, Cicito and Rodriguez, did they have other customers?
They did, Your Honor. There's evidence that Saucedo was independently selling, and there's also evidence that he was selling to at least one or more other individuals in distribution quantities, according to his own testimony. If we contrast this case to United States versus Pearson, which is a case where this court has found evidence of aiding and abetting liability, we see distinct acts of assistance that are separate from the actual transaction.
Now, was he also convicted of distribution?
He was, Your Honor. That was count three.
What was the point? I mean, why the did the conspiracy add to his sentence or what? A more serious crime?
The conspiracy, the sentence for conspiracy and the sentence for the possession run concurrently and fell within the same sentencing range. So the conspiracy conviction, the district court sentenced Mr. Colon at the high end of the sentencing range. The range was 110 to 137. Mr. Colon was sentenced at 135. It's our position that if the court reverses the conspiracy conviction, the district court should have an opportunity to reconsider its sentencing on the grounds that the conspiracy...
Did the government obtain some, apart from a possible sentencing effect, did the government obtain some procedural advantage from charging him with a conspiracy?
None that I'm aware of.
Someone's evidence against him, you know...
None that I'm aware of.
Did they attribute Cicito's other sales to him?
Or? No, they did not.
And so the quantity that enters into his sentence was just what he sold or what he possessed?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct, Your Honor. Turning briefly to the...
Well, didn't the government get some conspiratorial statements and evidence from Rodriguez, who didn't testify through the...
Yes, the government did introduce conspiratorial statements. I believe this court's law is that it's not necessary to charge with a conspiracy to include
right, no,
those
that's
statements.
True. But you have to find a you have to have evidence of a conspiracy too.
And we would submit that it's categorically lacking here. Turning to the Fourth Amendment issue just briefly, the Supreme Court requires...
You save your time for rebuttal, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Dahl. So, Mr. Lee...
May it please the court, my name is Stephen Lee for the United States.
What is the purpose of charging him with aiding and abetting a conspiracy? What does that add to the distribution charge? What's the point?
Well, I think that the government's position was that there was something more. The possession count focuses on one particular incident, one transaction, one day.
What difference the conspiracy does it make? Get the other drugs in as relevant conduct. I don't get it. I must say, I think this is an extremely tenuous case. This guy, as far as I can glean from the record, he's a good customer, period. He doesn't help these guys in their other business. They have other customers. Is it your position that all of Cicito's customers are members of the conspiracy or aiders and abettors of the conspiracy?
No, that would not be our position.
What's the difference between him and the others?
First of all, Cicito and Colon had... The economic interdependence.
Of course they do.
Stake.
I mean, look, you are a seller is economically interdependent with his buyers, obviously.
In this case, Cicito...
So your position really is that anybody who's at least a good customer, someone you might be solicitous of and dependent on and treat well, replaces cocaine or something, that creates a conspiracy.
That would not be our position.
Well, what is it that's more than a good... What is it that makes Colon more than a good customer?
First of all, there was the mutual trust between Cologne and Saucedo.
A what?
The mutual trust. There were the calls to protect each other.
Mutual trust. If you have a customer, there's an element of mutual trust, right? You trust the customer to pay you. Actually, of course, he is less trusted than in situations where they front the cocaine. But, you know, what is unusual about the mutual trust here?
First, again, there were the calls that Cologne made to Saucedo after he was stopped by the police.
Well, sure, he's lost his cocaine, so he's disturbed. So he calls his supplier. It's like, you know, you buy a dress at Neiman Marcus and you walk out and you catch it on something and it's ripped. If you're a good customer, you go back and they patch it up for nothing, something like that. Does that make you a part of Neiman Marcus?
No. But there are other signs
of
trust between them. In that case, in terms of Neiman Marcus, I think that would be a more like a typical buyer-seller type situation. The jury was instructed about buyer-seller here.
Typical seller-buyer, just illegal product.
There's evidence here about Saucedo sharing with Cologne a cell phone number that was attributed directly to him. Establishing some element of trust from which the jury could
have been. How else would they reach him without the phone number?
Saucedo also had an unregistered telephone number, which other members of the conspiracy used, and which he could have used to give to Cologne and could have given a more anonymous way of communicating.
So he didn't trust him as much as the other.
Right.
I think the argument would be that he actually, in some ways, at least with regards to that telephone number, it shows that he did trust Cologne by giving him a telephone number, Saucedo's telephone number, which could be traced back to Saucedo, thus exposing him in a way that an anonymous telephone number would not have. There was also elements in terms of during the telephone calls between Cologne and Saucedo, Saucedo would share personal information with Cologne and would work together to arrange the transactions in a way that was convenient.
They work together to arrange the transaction. Of course you have. Look, this is an illegal business. Obviously, you have to arrange time and place and codes and all that. I don't see how you can distinguish Cologne from any other customer of Saucedo.
There's also the amount that Cologne was buying from Saucedo during this time period.
No, that's irrelevant because he's a wholesaler, right?
Well, actually, Saucedo.
So now you're saying, well, the best customer is by virtue of being a good customer, he's a co-conspirator.
Well, in this case, this kind of, in some ways, Cologne's involvement was able to help transform Saucedo's role in the conspiracy. Up until this time.
Really? Of course, if you have a big customer, that's a terrific thing to have, right? So, look, maybe you want to argue big customers are aiders and abettors of. It's not a ridiculous argument. You could say, well, aiding and abetting, if you're a really big customer, you must know that you're helping your seller and you want the seller to succeed and sell. You could argue that, but you don't argue that.
No, and again, because. There's more, again, than just being a big customer. There's also the actions that Cologne and Saucedo took on behalf of
the seller. Is there any difference between how Cologne deals with Saucedo and how every intermediate distributor of cocaine deals with his supplier?
Well, those that are involved in a conspiracy together, there might not be. There was no price negotiation. That made it easier for Cologne.
So what?
There was no negotiation over price. The terms were set at the beginning, and they were able to thus avoid
those transactional costs. The less negotiation, the more it's a standard selling arrangement rather than a conspiracy. It's ridiculous. How can you argue that with a straight face, that if you don't negotiate over price with your customer, it shows that your customer is a co-conspirator of you?
It's just one step.
It doesn't make any sense at all. We usually think of a situation in which a customer can't negotiate for price with the seller as one where the customer has no bargaining power, right? And now you're saying that the person who has no bargaining power because he can't negotiate for price, that means he's actually part of the seller's enterprise.
I may have misspoken earlier. It's not the government's position that there was that the fact there was no price negotiation meant, well, I meant no price negotiation. I meant that basically the parties had agreed on a certain set of terms for cocaine pretty much at the beginning of their relationship, and that was what made it easier for the two of them to continue their conspiracy.
But there's no evidence of agreement other than the fact that the price was the same, and the price could be the same, too. You know, if you're going to buy something, you know, over the Internet, it's the same price. The seller decides what the price is going to be, and that's what you pay if you want to buy it.
That would be one interpretation, yes. But the jury could make it's a reasonable interpretation, reasonable inference for the jury to make.
It's complete mush. A conspiracy is an agreement. And an agreement would be an agreement to advance the Saucedo Rodriguez enterprise, which has other customers. What on earth did Colon ever do to help them advance their business except to buy, because Saucedo is his supplier?
Beyond buying the cocaine from the conspiracy, he also helped protect them. He also notified Saucedo.
Protect them?
By notifying Saucedo of the police
interest.
But
what is the reason to think that he's doing it for any other reason except he wants his cocaine?
Because he doesn't need to say that in order to get more cocaine.
He needs to say he's been ripped off. He wants relief. Now, I think if you had evidence that he had warned Saucedo to try to protect Saucedo's other business, where he gets a slice of Saucedo's other business, he gets a reward for warning him and keeping the police out of his hair, that would be good, but you don't have that.
That's right. But this transaction, the September 6th transaction and the stop, happened only about 4 days after the previous transaction.
An immediate seller whom you would not regard as a co-conspirator of his supplier. Because these little tidbits that you're offering us up are going to be found in every case.
Again, the jury was instructed on the buyer-seller
relationship. What does a jury know about these things? And you're charging him with aiding and abetting conspiracy was completely superfluous. You had a perfectly good distribution case against him. Aiding and abetting is difficult to understand. Conspiracy is difficult to understand. Putting them together is difficult to understand. Just serving up a muddle to a jury, figuring the more counts you have, the more likely a conviction. Conviction was a certainty anyway. I just don't understand it. It's pushing, right? Always pushing. Pushing on 404B, pushing on conspiracy. That's what we see from your office. I mean, it's a terrific office, obviously, but it's always pushing the outer boundaries of the criminal law.
Well, Your Honor, again, the jury was instructed on the elements of conspiracy. They did receive an aiding and abetting instruction. There's argument focusing on the conspiracy, on Mr. Colon being a member of that conspiracy, and the jury returned its verdict. And evidence, when viewed in the light most favorable to the government, would support that conviction for conspiracy.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Lee. So, Ms. Dahl, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Your Honors, let me just briefly turn to the Fourth Amendment issue. I recognize that the government has focused in its briefing on the issue of timing, and I would just ask this court to consider the totality of circumstances that were known prior to the stop, everything from the lack of any identifying information known about this supposed customer, the fact that the communications were being interpreted that were in code. There was no confirmed presence of drugs at that location. There was nothing observed about the individual as he visited the residence. There was nothing observed by the surveillance officer during the encounter on the porch, and there was nothing suspicious observed as the individual walked away from the porch. And I'd ask this court to consider those circumstances in light of this court's precedent in Ianco, Ingrao, and the Johnson case. Unless the court has any further questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Dahl and Ms. Lee, and thank you for accepting the appointment and your efforts on behalf of the client.